This is the TTY Dialer, episode 39, for the week of July 24th through July 29th. Hi there, this is your weekly companion to WRVO's nightly old-time radio show tuned to yesterday. I'm Mark Livonier. Every single night of the week, you can tune in for westerns, romance, comedy, drama, mystery, thrills, and more from radio's past from the 1930s through the early 1960s. We're on every night from 10 to midnight live on the air, also streaming live at our website, wrvo.org. And this podcast brings you a blend of radio history. We have fun with sound from radio's yesteryear. Also, a look at the shows coming up for the week.
Have you knocked on wood recently? Chances are you have. Most people do. Lightheartedly, of course, to guard against bad luck or some specific evil. It's a deep instinctive practice, old as the human race, to employ some ritual or other to fend off misfortune. The ancient Greeks never started a procession to the Oracle at Delphi without waiting for a flash of lightning to assure them that bad luck would keep its distance. You will remember the elaborate hocus-pocus of Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn to ward off disaster. Many a man carries a horse chestnut to keep rheumatism away. And rabbit's feet and horseshoes, many persons hope, provide magical protection against the caprice of an unknown tomorrow. But whether or not you believe in the power of good luck charms to prevent misfortune, there is a way to guarantee a safer and more secure future for yourself and your loved ones. And that's the prudential way. We don't call it magic, even though it sometimes seems like magic to prudential families, when prudential monthly income checks begin coming in after dads have permanently stopped. Magic to Dad himself, when prudential checks begin to pay for Junior's education. Magic indeed, when prudential retirement checks begin arriving to lift the burden of earning a living from Dad's shoulders. Some people believe a rabbit's foot will do it. Don't you think it would be wise to turn this job over to the prudential?
That was one of the more well-written commercials I've ever heard from radio's past. It was a spot for the sponsor of the Prudential Family Hour of Stars show, which actually went through a great change in its run on radio. The Prudential Company probably wanted to put its money into programs that seemed safe at the time. As the first iteration of the show, the Prudential Family Hour, without the stars part, was a half hour of concert music on CBS and ran for 7 years, featuring talent from the Metropolitan Opera and, at times, short stories about how the piece they were performing came to be. And the songs ran the gamut from operatic works to parts of film soundtracks and numbers from the Broadway stage. The show was well-received, but there was a transition away from concert music along with the name change to the Prudential Family Hour of Stars in 1948 to make way for dramatic plays. In the later 1940s, radio was becoming deluged with movie adaptations featuring Hollywood stars, and while it was great to hear, there was an audience fatigue that hurt the ratings of many of these types of shows with the same actors appearing in several of the same stories. And the lower ratings for the Prudential Family Hour of Stars may explain the level of writing for that commercial, because with no endorsement here, that was pretty amazing. So we're on podcast 39 of the TTY Dialer, and it makes me think, of course, of Jack Benny's eternal age of 39. He'll be opening up this Monday, July 24th, this evening of Old Time Radio with comedy from 1955. After that, the Eddie Cantor Show with musician John Charles Thomas as guest. Then it's True History at 11 o'clock with a new hour I've just put together of programs Cavalcade of America with a story of Nancy Hanks and Sky Blazers, an exciting series from 1940. This Tuesday night, July 25th at 10, it's drama from the Radio City Playhouse, then the La Rosa Hollywood Theater of Stars.
Hello, Brody.
Hello, Jono. The big hunk of beefsteak himself.
Well, if it isn't my friendly competitor, can I treat you to a drink?
No, thanks, Mulligan. I do my drinking in my own joint. I know what I'm getting there.
No, that's no way to talk, Brody. I'm sure Mr. Mulligan is nothing against a small businessman like yourself.
A small businessman? Listen, Sullivan, someday Steve Brody's saloon is going to be the place on the bottom.
Steve, please don't start anything.
Yeah, you go ahead and laugh, but I won't need any big windbags hanging around to put my joint over.
Steve.
At 11 o'clock Tuesday night, crime from The Whisperer and a broadcast of Pursuit from 1952. So if any of these sound good to you, make a plan and hear these shows Monday, July 24th and Tuesday, July 25th from 10 to midnight live on the air across central and northern New York or streaming live at WRVO.org. Great wit of the stage, radio, TV, and dinner parties, Abe Burrows made his debut in his own radio show this Tuesday, July 26th in 1947. He was known as a comedian's comedian, a wit's wit, and was admired by Groucho Marx and Robert Benchley, among others, for his sharp timing and on-the-fly humor that was helped by him tinkering on a piano. When talking about his upbringing, he said that when I was a kid, when kids were throwing rocks, I made jokes. Though for a living, he primarily wrote lines and gags for comedians like Henny Youngman and started to make a career out of his talent by selling them to radio programs. Shows like Rudy Valley in the late 1930s with skits featuring John Barrymore. And Burroughs is co-credited with coming up with one of radio's funniest and most enduring characters, Archie, the bartender manager on the Duffy's Tavern radio show, where he became head writer for years and considered the show's star and director Ed Gardner as a great teacher for his comedy. And among the comedians he worked with, Joan Davis seemed to help Burroughs the most. She employed him and his New York-style humor on her radio show, which was broadcast live in front of an audience. And after one broadcast, Joan asked the audience to stick around and invited Abe to take the stage to do what he was best known for at parties in Hollywood and New York and nightclubs, and that was his mix of jokes and parody songs with hilarious titles that got the studio roaring. It would become a regular thing after Davis's broadcasts, and word got around, which eventually led to Abe getting his own 15-minute radio show, heard Saturday nights at 7:30 on CBS at first, then full half hours during its last months on the air. It even received the Radio Critics Award for Best Radio Show. His legacy in comedy is really vast, and often behind the scenes as a writer or part of a team, like his co-authorship of the Broadway play How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, and his significant work with the Tony Award-winning show Guys and Dolls in 1950, along with a lucrative career as the writer called on to rescue a show with rewrites like a script doctor. But his start was in radio, and with many apexes of his career behind the scenes, actually hearing him to many was a real high point.
The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations presents Abe Burrows.
Hello, I'm Burrows, like he said. Abe Burrows, creators of songs like Mother Used to Write. And author of that lovely new ballad, I'm Always Chasing Rainbows, because I never seem to meet any girls. You know, I'm still new in radio, and because of that, the listeners still write and ask what I look like. I've described myself briefly from time to time, but it doesn't seem to be satisfactory. I guess I could tell you exactly what I look like, but I think that's a lousy thing to say about a guy. I really don't know quite how to, well, one thing I can tell you, I don't have a mustache. And in addition, I don't have much hair either. See? No mustache, no hair. It's a set. I really kind of like not being bothered with hair, a lot of thick stuff up here. In fact, someday I may put on the market a preparation I'm working on. It's a revolutionary new tonic called Stay Bald. Stay Bald prevents the growth of unsightly hair on the head. Of course, I've got some hair on the sides and back of the head. I keep that part crew cut. It's rather neat, too. You know, with the crew cut sides and the blank top, I kind of give the impression of a man who has spent several hours in a pencil sharpener. Well, enough about that. After all, looks aren't everything. And in my case, they're not anything. I know you're all anxious to hear me sing. Well, I know I am. I've got a new number here, an apologetic type love song. You know the sort of thing where the fella is sorry for what he did and realizes he shouldn't ought to have did it? Like this. There is teardrops in your two blue eyes and teardrops on your face I see. Tell me, darling, while I dry you off a little, is all of this dampness for me? Stop your tears and sighs. I want to apologize. I didn't mean it when I slugged you, darling. I didn't mean to hit you with that chair. I didn't want to push you through that window. I didn't want to pull out all your hair. I didn't mean to smack you with that grapefruit. I didn't mean to let that hammer fall. So if I broke your head last night, it's just because I love you most of all. That number ought to be called "And the Band-Aid Played On." I got some cute new ideas for songs this week. One of them is a South American type thing based on President Truman's trip to Rio. It's called "While the Rumba Band Played Mama Yo Quiero, We Danced the Missouri Wall." Then I have a topical type things about fashion. This is kind of cute. I call it, "Now that long skirts are back again, I can see that her eyes are blue." I probably won't finish that one. Frankly, I don't think the new feminine styles are anything to sing about anyway. They sound so... Well, I mean those long skirts, padded hips, corsets, all other kinds of padding. Gee, from now on, every girl will be a blind date.
This Wednesday night, July 26th at 10 o'clock, it's Adventure. From the show High Adventure from 1954, then the circus-themed Clyde Beatty Show from 1949. After that, Broadway, as Best Plays, brings us a great story called There's Always Juliet.
What did you just call me?
Oh, I called you Steve. Oh, it's funny, I don't know why, but I've been thinking of you as Steve ever since yesterday.
All right. Let's both be Steve.
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 Oh, dear, this can't last.
What?
Well, things being fun like this. You're a darling fool, Steve. I say, are you hungry?
I could toy with some food.
So could I. I could do more than toy.
What do you say we go out somewhere? I'll dash over to the Ritz and be back in half an hour. How's that?
Bye. It's been a good day.
It's been a grand day.
3 weeks. 21 days. Oh, Steve, you are fun.
This Thursday night, July 27th at 10, Horror from Mystery House and Inner Sanctum. Then Sci-Fi at 11 from The Mysterious Traveler with the story The Man Who Vanished. And X-1, The Seventh Order. Another new hour, not yet heard on Tune to Yesterday. So hear these shows if you can. Wednesday, July 26th or Thursday, July 27th from 10 to midnight. A somewhat interesting, but at the time pretty familiar, radio pairing took place this Monday, July 24th in 1943. Actors Jay Johnston and Vicky Vola were brought together on a summer replacement show while taking a break from the one that they were already on, the extremely popular Mr. District Attorney series, where over 28 million people were listening Wednesday nights on NBC. But it wasn't that network that proposed what could have been a highly unusual schedule for the actors. It was the rival Mutual Broadcasting System that capitalized on their popularity with a show called Foreign Assignment, moving them into a primetime Saturday night slot. On Wednesdays prior, the pair had starred as the DA and secretary, and in this new program, Jay Johnston played a correspondent for the American Press with Vicky Vola as his assistant. With many crime-fighting characters of many stripes in 1943, started to focus on foiling the plans of the Nazis and other sympathizers at home and overseas, which, during certain weeks on Mr. District Attorney, those stories were starkly similar to real cases or crimes in progress. And this worried the FBI, for obvious reasons, so the new Foreign Assignment show, the characters took on crimes of the Axis overseas through investigative reporting. And the close ear of the Bureau would actually pay off for the writer of Foreign Assignment, Frank Fares, who would go on to write over a dozen shows for the highly approved This Is Your FBI series. Foreign Assignment didn't receive the astronomical audience numbers that Mr. District Attorney did, and so far as I know, it made such little impact that the Hooper ratings of the time didn't even record the data. But the short-lived show was a pretty clever way to bring this popular acting team together on the weekend, and since both shows were live when Mr. District Attorney returned from its summer hiatus in 1943, Johnston and Vola continued on Foreign Assignment until January of 1944. Here's some sound from their last broadcast.
I deeply appreciate, Miss Manning and gentlemen, the sentiment expressed in the message which you have brought to me and the great risk you have taken in order to deliver it.
Well, what's the verdict, Dr. Renard?
My resignation of the leadership of the underground movement was not, Mr. Berry, an impulsive action.
We are certain of that, though.
Yes, of course.
Sure. It was reached after careful weighing of many important aspects. It was based on what I considered to be sound reasons.
Well, Mr. Peabody and I would like to take a story back with us, Doctor, about those reasons.
I'm sorry, gentlemen, but I prefer not to discuss it.
But you would not be identified with them, sir. We plan to use them as a basis.
Am sorry, Mr. Peabody.
Say, now, look, Doctor. George and I, along with Miss Manning here, have gambled our necks to come over here for that story.
I appreciate that fact, Mr. Berry, and so stated a moment ago.
Aren't you overlooking a more important fact, sir?
I do not understand.
The fact that your reasons for resigning are not your exclusive property.
That's right. I still do not understand.
Well, George means there are millions of people in this world, your own people and everybody else who's giving their blood, sweat, and tears to smash the Nazis. And it means all those millions have a just share in your reasons.
Exactly.
Please, gentlemen.
Now, look, Doctor. The Allies are on the verge of starting the invasion that'll tell the tale. And if it flops, it could be because the French underground wasn't hitting on all cylinders. And what would that make you?
Mr. Berry.
There'd be a lot of people wanting to know why you let them down. And they might not stop with just asking you.
Why have you stopped fighting the Nazis, sir?
Why have you stopped helping those who want to help your people?
Why have you turned your back on the fate of the French people?
That is enough!
But are your reasons enough, sir?
Can they cover what you've done and leave your conscience free?
How about that, Doctor?
Stop it, I tell you! Stop!
I will give my reasons. Okay? We're listening, Doc.
After the fall of France, I joined eagerly in the underground movement because I believed that an Allied victory would not only free my people, but would guarantee them the chance to build a new France. Went through the hell of Dunkirk. And what millions of other lads are fighting and dying for, and what other millions in Europe are suffering unspeakable tortures for. But what is the shape of things to come by the shape of things that are happening now? Certain of my own people who escaped to safety and comfort rather than share the sufferings and struggles of their fellow countrymen at home, right now they are planning for the day when they can ride a white horse down the Champs-Élysées and set up a dictatorship as absolute as the one they hypocritically profess to hate.
Yes, but Dr.
Reynolds... And more! Already some nations are beginning to quarrel over spheres of influence. Already sacred pledges are being broken. Already a new scourge is beginning to sweep Europe. And already the dim outlines of future wars are to be seen. And you ask me to urge my people to pour out their blood to bring these things to pass? I will not! No! By the eternal heavens, I will not.
Yes, there are many others who feel as you do, Dr. Reynolds. But they are carrying on.
That's right.
They are carrying on because their only hope for getting the kind of world they want to live in lies on the other side of the horizon. Not on this side.
If they stop now, they're sunk for keeps.
Many of the things you describe may come to pass. But the important thing is, the people believe they're fighting for a better world. And if they believe that's what they're fighting for, then that's what they are fighting for.
And if they keep on fighting for it, someday they're going to get it.
Good night, Miss Manning. Gentlemen.
Good night, sir.
Good night, Dr. Renard.
Yeah, good night. Cigarette, George?
Hmm? Yes, yes, thanks.
Here's a light.
Yes.
Well, I guess that's that.
Hmm.
Now, come on, fellas. We've got to make our way back to the joint.
Just a minute, please.
What? Blast.
We met earlier this evening, remember? I'm Major Krause of the Gestapo.
Oh, yeah. Hiya, Major. What can we do for you?
Let me see. You were Pierre Gillemont.
No, I believe that was my card.
Yeah, mine said Jean Moreau or something like that.
It does not matter now.
No.
Come. My men are waiting to escort you to the headquarters of the Gestapo chief for Marseille.
Oh, what's the chief's name?
Colonel Wilhelm Reiber.
I never heard of him.
Nor I.
This way, please.
This Friday night on Tune to Yesterday, July 28th, an hour of Westerns, it's Hopalong Cassidy, and a broadcast of Have Gun, Will Travel. Then comedy from a sitcom hour of the Phil Harris, Alice Faye Show, and My Friend Irma. This Saturday night at 10 o'clock, July 29th, it's yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starting an hour of mystery, followed by The Adventures of Ellery Queen.
We've got to find that bubblegum kid. We've got to.
Yeah, Inspector.
Now, whoa, Dad. Take it easy.
Inspector, why is this boy so important?
Because, Nicky, I think he knows who the frog is. The adult who organized the kid gang and directs their operations.
Oh, you make him talk, Inspector?
We've got to break the back of this gang. Billy, the boy is hiding out around Stucker Street somewhere. You get down there and don't come back till you find him.
Yes, sir. Let's see. I think we've been trying to do.
And the Saturday night at 11, it's Sci-Fi from X-1, then Beyond Tomorrow from 1950. So hear these shows Friday, July 28th, or Saturday, July 29th, from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday. So, last week I asked you to send me your stories of how you discovered old-time radio. And I really appreciate you taking the time to write. I heard from Chuck, who said, I am 52 years old and began listening to radio dramas in my youth in the 1970s. Local radio station WYBX used to air a program hosted by E.G. Marshall called the Radio Mystery Theater. And during that time, there were other stations whose call letters escaped me that used to air The Shadow and The Lone Ranger, among others. You know, I've heard that a lot, too, about the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, that while many people were in college, they would listen to that while they were doing their homework and the like. So pretty cool. Thanks, Chuck. Also, I heard from Brian, who said, probably like most people, I first heard War of the Worlds growing up. I then found Imagination Theater, which is recently closed down, and that's true, out of Seattle, and would listen late Saturday night. Around the same time, mid to late 90s, I found the NPR Playhouse and the wonderful and unfinished Hayward Sanitarium. And late in the 90s into the aughts, I found Doctor Who audio dramas. Thanks a lot, Brian. That's an interesting kind of trajectory. And after hearing War of the Worlds, that's a pretty high standard to put on future listening, but it is a pretty cool entryway into basically the theater of the mind. So thanks a lot for sending that in. As for me, I can make this a long story, but basically when I was around 10 years old or so, I had been rifling through my father's cassette tapes. He had quite a few, and among them I found a Groucho Marx cassette, basically reruns of You Bet Your Life, and also a few others. One was The Green Hornet with a couple of episodes, one was The Shadow, and another one featured Humphrey Bogart in two plays that I still remember distinctly. The first one was The Maltese Falcon, and on the other side it was The Front Page, that Ben Hecht play that turned into a movie, His Girl Friday with Cary Grant. Anyways, these were the, you know, four tapes or so that I had, and I listened to them over and over again. They just really drew me in. And being 10 years old, maybe I didn't get all the nuances of it necessarily, but I got it enough that it really got me hooked, but I didn't know what else to do in terms of listening to old-time radio. There were cassette companies out there, but pretty much shortly after that, between 10 and 11 years old, finding the tapes, I found what was this station and what was airing at the time, the WRVO Playhouse, with John Krause as host, and that used to start at 7:30, as some of you might remember, and end sometime after midnight, whenever that last show was. We didn't care too much about the timing of the broadcast back then. So through that ton of listening I did to that show, I remember, I don't know if there's any, you know, video gamers that are listening to this right now, but I used to have a Commodore 64 computer set up in my room, and I would turn the sound down, which was pretty awful, and listen to the old-time radio instead. That was sort of my pastime. So I would like to hear your story. If you've not sent it in and kind of wanted to, well, do it. Let me know. I'd love to read it in the podcast, and it always sort of informs me on where we can go in terms of what gets scheduled to bring some of those great old memories back. So that's an official call once more to share your discovery of old-time radio story with me for next week's podcast, too. Email me, mark@wrvo.org. That's mark@wrvo.org. All right, that's going to do it for this week. Thanks a lot for listening. Enjoy the shows this coming week on Tune to Yesterday.